from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of April 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us to take up the energy markets. In just about 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast. And then, in the second half hour of our program, on some of these stations and always online at willag.org, we'll talk with Sharon Covert of Covert Farms about her work with the United States Soybean Export Council and with Gary Schnittke from the Farm Doc team. He and I talked about the acre program this morning and just how much, if anything, it is estimated to pay out for last year's crop and what's at stake for the one going in the ground right now. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on the Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at 4.78 1/4, up 2 1/4 today. July, the harvest month, at $4.90 1/2, 2 1/2 higher. And September, soft red at 5.07, up 2 1/4. In Kansas City, the July contract for the hard red at 5.03, up 2 cents on the day. May corn futures back in Chicago, 3.47 1/2, a settlement price, down 4 3/4 for the lead option. July at 3.53 3/4, 5 3/4 lower. September corn at 3.61 1/2, down 6 1/2, and December futures, $3.69, down 7 1/2. The March 2011 contract at 3.82, down 7 1/4. May soybean futures, 9.82 3/4, down 16 cents. July at 9.93, down 16. August at 9.89 3/4, 15 3/4 lower. September beans at 9.72 3/4, 16 3/4 lower. And November contract in the bean pit for the new crop, $9.61 3/4, down 15 3/4 cents a bushel. May bean meal futures off $7.60 at 2.87. July down 7.40 at 2.86.80. Soybean oil, 39.12, down 17 in the nearby contract. In July at 39.56, down 18. April live cattle futures at $98.05, down $1.47 1/2. June at 93.72 1/2, $1.77 1/2 lower. April feeders at 113.20, up 20 cents. And May lean hogs at $88.12 1/2, up $1.30. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, nearby June contract, $82.14, down $2.06. Ethanol at $1.57 2/10 on the lead, down $0.01 3/10. And the natural gas at $4.22 1/2, down 3 7/10. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.22 4/10, down $0.01 3/10. And the gold futures today at $1,161.70 on their settlement price, a gain of $8.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,060. That's just about 145 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 82.14 is up 0.66 on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 273.18, down 5.2. The Goldman Sachs at 535.75, down 13.1. for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says northerly flow and clearing skies will bring scattered frost to northern and central sections of the two-state area for Wednesday morning. Northern and eastern Indiana are likely to see temperatures a few degrees below freezing. The cold will quickly give way to warming trends that should push the thermometer back to the 70s and even the low 80s through the weekend. Late this work week, a storm system will move from the plains into the Ohio River Valley, and showers and thunderstorms will follow it. Heaviest rainfall, of course, expected to fall in the southern third of Illinois and Indiana. Rainfall of 1 to 1.5 inches will be targeted in the area south of Interstate 70. Little rain expected in northern Indiana. And only isolated pockets of minor flooding have been reported in the Illinois River Valley, with some improvement expected before the next rainmaker comes through. More on the agricultural weather when we talk with Don Day. That comes up at the bottom of this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon, time to check the agricultural futures markets. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana is with us. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Kind of an ugly day in Chicago. A lot of red there. What happened?
Well, I think, you know, the main thing that hit was the Portugal and Greece debt ratings were downgraded today. That hit the stock market. It boosted the dollar. It hurt the euro dollar, and it weighed on the crude oil. And that, along with yesterday's poor close, and the talk that the Chinese might be tightening credit in their real estate market, all sort of come together along with the rapid planning rates and put a little bit of pressure on everything today, Todd.
But I thought we were in the midst of a recovery. Surely it didn't swing that quickly.
You know, we were wondering why the recovery was there to start with the planning rates, with the crop going in, with the supply, world supplies, and everything going quite as much as we did. You know, the other thing that happened, of course, was I think that we just did not see the fund, the index fund or the other fund short covering from the regular funds and fund buying from the index funds had tailed off a little bit also. So that pressure wasn't there applying the upside. And then when we took the economic factors into consideration here today, along with the 50% planting rate and the unofficial planting rates of beans, that sort of just sort of tipped the boat over a little bit or leaned it awful heavy to one side anyhow for today.
Is there expectation of follow through tonight and tomorrow?
Well, you know, that's going to be the point. We're going to take a look and, you know, it's going to have to, we're going to look and see how the energies trade tonight for the outside markets because they're still very influential on helping drive the market. So maybe we do. If the euro dollar can stabilize, if we would see the euro dollar stabilized and up a little bit, we could see a little bit of recovery from here. But, you know, we did some chart damage today, just like we did chart damage. We went through 950 on the upside. On, say, the beans, why we did chart damage when we took the July beans and settled them, you know, under the 96 today or the 95 level, so settling at 93. So there's some chart damage done. We've, you know, come back down through things. Now, whether we'll see follow-through tomorrow, you know, if the weather stays good and we don't see a rally in the energies or the euro dollar, why, there's a good chance we'll see a little follow through the downside.
Todd. You would have thought, speaking of weather, that the cold weather might have spawned a little bit of despair in Chicago in terms of the idea that the crop might get hit if it's been planted fairly early. And it has and probably is up. I suppose they think the growing points aren't quite far enough out of the ground to worry about yet.
Well, you know, as you say that, it was on a couple of the news wires this morning that they were worried about the 63% of the corn crop that's planted in Minnesota. The weather watchers are concerned of a May frost freeze that could stress early planted crop. So, you know, that was on two or three of the news wires this morning that they are a little bit concerned about that. But I think they're a lot less concerned about that than they are about the good planting progress and the good soil conditions that we're seeing out there right now.
Yeah, what's the environment in your area look like? A lot of corn up and able to row it?
We have a lot of corn up and able to row it. We're probably over 80% done with corn planting in our area. And we're probably pushing 35 to 40% done with beans. So we are the fastest we have ever been since I've lived in Indiana, Todd. So, you know, this is a tremendous start to this growing season, at least in our area here.
Have you been reminding your clients to check their bins and to be safe when they do that? Because if it's ugly in there, they don't want to hurt themselves trying to get it out, I guess.
Well, we tried to do that all through the winter, Todd, and there are a few cases where everybody didn't listen.
Well, that results in a hot bin, usually. So.
That results in not much fun for anybody.
No, that's a bad deal all around. So what are you telling producers at this point about the new crop and what they should do? Should they stand at the sidelines and just watch? Is there anything that they need to be worried about?
You know, a couple of advisors pushed some bean sales back on that they lifted when they broke through the 950 mark there before. You know, we sold sold a little bit of corn and beans this morning for people that weren't up to where we wanted to be. And like I say, we want to be very careful in here, but we're thinking that there's a better chance of a sideways to down move now than there is an upwards move for right at the moment.
Any final word before I let you go?
That's about it today, Todd.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programming comes from the Westchester Group, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is at westchester-auctions.com or at 800-607-6888.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. The latest from the USDA shows that crop progress by the 25th of April for corn planting had proceeded to just about half of the nation's crop. That's the earliest date on record that planting has progressed to that midpoint at 50% complete. Progress was 30 percentage points ahead of last year and 28 percentage points ahead of the five-year rolling average. Planting in the major corn-producing regions, as you'll hear in just a moment, progressed rapidly during the week as producers rushed to get seed in the ground on as much acreage as possible ahead of the late-week rainstorms, specifically planting in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota. Four of the five largest corn-producing states advanced 39 percentage points or more during the week. Nationally, 7% of the corn crop was emerged by the 25th day of April, 5 percentage points ahead of last year, and 2 points ahead of the five-year average. Emergence was most advanced in Texas. However, progress was 10 days behind normal as continued rainfall and soggy fields in the high and low plains further delayed planting in those regions. Now here are the updates from the state statisticians.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with a weekly crops and weather report for the week ending April 25, 2010. Nearly perfect field conditions early in the week promoted one of the most active weeks for planting in Iowa history. Corn planting was in full swing and progressed rapidly, with many counties surpassing the milestone of having three-quarters of their corn acres already in the ground. Rainfall late in the week and over the weekend halted planting, but will help activate the chemicals that have been applied and promote emergence of newly planted crops. Soybean planting has begun, although progress has been limited as farmers concentrated on planting corn. Corn planting advanced at a record-setting pace, increasing from 19% last week to 68% complete as of April 25th. This was 13 days ahead of the five-year average and the highest percentage planted on record for this date. All nine districts in Iowa reported over 55% of the corn planted, with central Iowa leading the state at 81% of the expected corn acreage already in the ground. Soybean planting was 4% complete, compared with 2% last year and 1% for the five-year average. Temperatures in Iowa for the week as a whole averaged 4.2 degrees above normal, the seventh consecutive warmer than normal week, and statewide average precipitation was 1.5 inches, the wettest week since late October. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending April 25th. Last week began with more excellent weather for field work, but widespread rains halted planting progress late in the week. There were 4.9 days suitable for field work last week, and soil moisture supplies finished the week rated as 3% short, 71% adequate, and 26% surplus. Temperatures were generally near normal and averaged 7/10 of a degree above average. Rainfall totals averaged 1.57 inches last week, 6/10 of an inch above the norm. Most farmers will probably welcome last week's rain. Some producers had stopped planting because soil conditions were too dry. Corn planting reached 73% complete by the end of the week. This surpasses the previous high percentage planted for April 25th, which was 67% in 2005. 1 year ago, planting progress was 4% complete, and the five-year average is 28%. 10% of the corn crop has emerged compared to 6% normally. Soybean planting is now 5% complete. The five-year average for the state is 1%. 6% of the wheat crop is heading, compared to 3% for the five-year average. The condition of the wheat crop was rated 7% very poor, 23% poor, 39 fair, 28 good, and 3% excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Scott Kelly with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with a weather and crops report for the week ending of April 25th. Corn planting was active last week across the eastern third of the state until rains halted progress. Accumulations of an inch or more were common across all but the central counties. Rain scattered throughout the week limited farm activities, and in many areas soils will need to dry before further planting progress can be made. Temperatures for the week averaged 1 degree above normal, with highs near 70s and lows in the 30s. Precipitation of 2 or more inches was common in the panhandle. Statewide corn planting was 23% complete, near last year, but ahead of 15% average. Oats planting was 85%, with nearly half of the crop emerged. Wheat conditions rated 74% good or excellent, well above average, and alfalfa conditions also rated above average. This is Scott Kelly with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the Crop Weather Report for the week ending April 25th. Another excellent week for field work until the weekend showers arrived, which allowed farmers to rapidly plant their field crops. Corn planting continued its record pace and pushed ahead of the record set in 2004, 42% completed at this time. Soybean planting for the week was also at a record pace and passed the previous record set in 2004 of 8% planted at this time. 56% of the intended corn acreage has been planted, up 39 percentage points from last week and well ahead of last year's 2% planted at this time and also ahead of the 5-year average of 14%. By area of the state, 53% has been planted in the north, 63% in the central region, and 51% in southern Indiana. 5% of the planted corn acreage has emerged, compared with 0% for last year and 1% for the 5-year average. Planting of soybeans is also ahead of the average pace, with 12% of the intended soybean acreage planted, compared to 0% for last year and 2% for the 5-year average. 53% of the winter wheat acreage is jointed, compared with 42% last year and 53% for the 5-year average. Winter wheat condition is rated as 71% good to excellent, compared to 78% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason at Illinois Public Media Studios here in Urbana-Champaign. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
On a Tuesday afternoon, time to check the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State University is with us. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How are you today?
Doing well, Todd.
Skies have brightened up here, and in that, we saw good planting progress across our state and much of the Midwest. Did farmers there in Kansas proceed quickly, too?
We did pretty well. We had some rains in the south-central part of the state and parts of the west where if we get rain out in these drier portions, we never really complain. We're thankful for it, but it has slowed things down a little bit in the south-central part of the state.
I'll bet they're looking for a repeat of last year, aren't they?
Well, for us, not necessarily for you guys. We wouldn't wish anyone ill, there in terms of late harvest, but we would like to have the good yields of last year.
Yeah, that's what I meant, was your Kansas yields, not anything
right.
else. All right, so there was a lot of corn that came out of Kansas, a lot of corn that came out of the Midwest in general, and you just took a look at what that means to the ethanol industry and to something that happens in Kansas a lot. You have an awful lot of beef cattle there in those big feedlots, and sometimes they use distillers' dried grains. You took a look at how that's changed from corn to distillers' dried grains over the last several years and the displacement process. What'd you find?
Well, with the, policy-driven production of distillers grains following from the use of corn and ethanol, there's been created a very usable, high-quality supply of feedstuffs that livestock feeders across different species are using, some more than others, in substitution for corn on the one hand and for soybean meal on the other. And when you look at the amount of distillers grains that we have to make use of in the country. It's a growing amount. I think we estimated about 58 billion pounds of distillers grains produced in 2009, more so coming this year. And that, without question, substitutes for corn on the one hand and soybean meal on the other, as we'd said. When you look at where the distillers grains have gone in the last year, again, this is according to the Renewable Fuel Association estimates, about 39% of them, of that quantity, went into dairy rations, about 38% into beef cattle rations, about 15% into swine production, about 7% into poultry, and then 1% off in other places, goats, wherever you might find use of it. So it's definitely being used, and there's much discussion amongst the livestock industry folks, animal scientists from universities, wherever, as to just how much of this product you can use to displace these other products. And I think in the information that we're talking about, Todd, the price is right for these products. Generally, on a per pound basis, they've been running about equal with corn on a per pound of product, and markedly less than soybean meal. So people are, particularly if they happen to be located close to one of these plants, you know, within easy driving distance where they can make use of the wet products as opposed to the dry product, then there's been a real economic advantage to making use of it. Mm-hmm. We found that in beef cattle rations, for some of the dry products, they can, use as much as 20% distillers grains in their overall ration for wet product, up to 65% moisture. They can use up to 40%. And really, in dairy cattle, we found some of the best usage of this. Some good conservative estimates are that they can substitute as much as 10 to 15% of the total quantity of the ration fed with distillers grains. And at swine rations, 10, maybe 15%, about 10% in poultry rations. Of course, there are trade-offs in all these things, so these economic entrepreneurial livestock feeders are taking this feedstuff in hand and looking at the other ones that they have in hand, coming up with the least cost ration that they can use to get the best performance and make the most money, try to be profitable with their livestock enterprises. So there's much to look at here.
You expect that they will continue to do this, and I think the summary said that right now it appeared that there had been a settling out of the price of distillers versus the price of corn at about, what, a third? Is that right?
It looks like, yes. If you take it down to a per-pound basis,
right.
Again, a bushel of corn, 56 pounds, take that down to per pound basis for distillers, for dry distillers grains, there's not a lot of difference. They've been running fairly equal with regard to price per pound. But the trend has been moving lower with regard to, say, in Iowa, the price of distillers grains relative to corn. And again, right now we're at about a steady state.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks a bunch.
That's Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State University, joining us here on a Tuesday afternoon to talk about the agricultural energy market. In just a couple of minutes, Don Day will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In business news, Deere and Company, the world's largest farm equipment maker, opened a manufacturing and parts distribution plant near Moscow today, saying it was prepared to increase investment in the country. The plant, Deere's single largest investment in Russia, will make farm equipment, including large tractors and combine harvesters, as well as other equipment for use in construction and forestry. Deere said last July it had planned to invest over $500 million in new Russia projects. Valero Energy Corporation today says it lost money for the fourth straight quarter as motorists, airlines, and trucking companies burned less fuel. Valero, America's largest independent oil refiner reported a loss of $113 million, or 20 cents a share, in the first 3 months of the year. That compares with a profit of $309 million, or 60 cents per share, in the same period a year ago. The trade chief of the European Union says that threatening China with WTO sanctions will not convince Beijing to revalue its currency. Chinese Commerce Minister Chen Deming said the yuan was not undervalued and reiterated that China would only adjust the currency's exchange rate if it were beneficial to its own economy. And chemical maker DuPont today says it more than doubled its earnings for the first quarter. It reported earnings of about $1.14 billion, or $1.24 per share for the quarter ending March 31st, up from $488 million, or 54 cents per share for the first quarter last year. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, is traveling this afternoon, but making time for us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Where are you today, Don?
Well, I'm along Interstate 80 heading west in Wyoming.
Oh, interstate. Well, at least it's an interstate we know about. that's all right. You said Interstate 80. I thought, wow, he's not too far away, but you're still a long ways away. So
yeah, it's a big interstate.
Yeah, are the wide open skies beautiful out there today, or gray?
It really is. A high pressure building in, and this is going to bring some fair weather to the Midwest and Corn Belt, at least here for a few days. Some nice spring conditions, but we certainly are going to be looking at another wave of shower and thunderstorm activity for the Midwest and Corn Belt this weekend. Probably going to have some severe weather to contend with, especially in the southern and eastern areas. But coverage of rain and thunderstorm activity looks to be pretty widespread as early as Friday and certainly by the weekend.
Yeah, so this comes on the heels of an inch to an inch and a half, some places as much as 2 or 3 inches if you were in Missouri in the southern part of Illinois. How much more rainfall are we talking about?
I don't think the system is going to be as wet as the last one, but a half to three quarters to an inch of rain in many areas will be a good bet with this system, especially favoring those southern areas again.
And then maybe we better talk about Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. They didn't get as much out of the last system. Doesn't sound like they're going to get as much out of this system either. Any at all?
They're going to get some. And as you stated, they kind of didn't get a lot out of the last system, although I think this system for some areas, especially Nebraska, may do a little bit better with rain out of this system. So they won't be missed by this system, but the heavier moisture will be in the southern area.
Now, we would like a little more heat, I suppose, to get the corn up and growing quickly. Is that going to be the case?
Not really. I think the warmest weather we have is in the short term, over the next 3 or 4 days here. On the whole, temperatures across most of the lower 48 are going to trend a little below normal. Not a lot below normal, but we're not going to be able to gain ground with any real, a persistent warmer pattern. We're still going to be kind of up and down a little bit. So don't expect much heat unit accumulation here over the next week.
I think I made note that as we change gears into this next system, that are the winds going to be coming out of the south and pretty strong? I'm thinking about spraying operations more than anything else.
Yeah, ahead of this next system, the southerly wind flow, a lot like the last one, will be pretty strong. So we're going to have some pretty good southerly breezes ahead of it, switching into the west-northwest behind it.
All right, take a look at other places around the planet you've been watching, whether that be in the southwest in the Plains State and how the hard red winter wheat is doing in the United States or possibly in China and the beginning of their growing season, which has been pretty slow.
It has been, and it's going to stay that way. Now, the outlook for China is a little warmer, a little drier. So they'll get a little bit of help there. Precipitation chances across most of China look to be in the normal range. So some spring moisture coming, but nothing excessive. Northern Europe, if we go over to Russia, look at Eastern and Western Europe, prospects for moisture there, very good. Hard winter wheat areas in the U.S. I would say fairly favorable conditions coming here over the next week.
Don, thanks so much, and be safe on the highways.
Thank you, sir.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us from Interstate 80 in Wyoming. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report for some of our stations. We'll continue now. Sharon Covert will be here. She's with USEC. I'll tell you what that is in a moment. For the rest of you, we'll say so long.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, we'll talk with the director at the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Her name is Sharon Covert, and she is from Covert Farms from right here in Tiscalwa, Illinois. That's in Bureau County up near Interstate 80, if you're familiar with the state and how the interstates run through it. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon, Sharon. We appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
This is a fairly new organization. Can you tell me a bit about the Export Council and what USEC does?
Well, USEC is the United States Soybean Export Council, and it's made up of farmers and industry members and part of what we call the allied industry, which would be like our corresponding checkoff boards in different states. So it's about 50 members of the organizations besides the American Soybean Association and the United Soybean Board.
And your goal is to develop export markets?
The only real purpose is to create opportunities that maximize U.S. soybean farmer profits. And that's our bottom line. And what we try to do with all the projects that we do around the world is to sell soybeans to make U.S. soybean farmers more profitable.
This is a fairly new organization within the last decade, maybe within the last half decade. Why was it developed? We have a Foreign Agricultural Service. We already have the United Soybean Board that does projects. Of course, USDA is heavily involved in all of those things, and some of it's and part of it's funded by checkoff dollars that soybeans that come from every sale of a bushel of soybean from that originate from the farmer. Why is there or was there a need for USEC to be developed?
What we wanted to do was to bring more of the industry into the export equation, to work with them, to our fellow companies out in the country to sell more beans throughout the world. We felt that we needed to work with the industry more to make that happen. And this gives the industry an opportunity to be part of the organization, to have some say in how we go about our business throughout the world.
So does that mean there are members from ADM and Cargill and Bunge on the board as well?
They're not on the board, but certainly we talk with them. But there are other companies on the board, such as specialty product companies or just people who are exporting. There are the Board of Trade is part of it. People who do cargo shipping are part of it. So it just invites industry people in to be part of this organization.
Can you tell me about export sales and what you do?
Well, we're very pleased with our export sales. In the last 3 years, we've had record sales each year. And as you may know, about 55% of the U.S. soybean production is exported in a marketing year, and in the year of 2008-2009 selling season, we sold over 1.56 billion bushels of U.S. soybean and soybean products. So certainly U.S. soy is the number one valued export of agricultural products at over $15 billion annually.
And what kinds of things does the board do to promote sales overseas?
Well, there are a lot of things that we do in different projects, but we hold hundreds of global seminars, workshops, and buying conferences annually this helps provide an opportunity to meet with the soybean industry in their local market and show them the quality of our product, make it so they are familiar and know our people here in the U.S. and our companies that are involved in shipping products to them, and also to put a face on the U.S. farmer, the soybean farmer, so that they know that person also.
You have many offices, it appears, around the globe. Can you tell me about some of those?
At the present time, we have 9 offices around the world, but we work in a lot more countries than that. We have consultants in about 80 different countries throughout the world that tell the customer about our product, show them the product, and even bring them here to the U.S. to look at how we grow beans, the companies that they'll be involved with if they buy from us, and what we have to offer in a quality product.
Can you tell me about the export sales to China? They have been at a dramatic pace. This is this nation's largest export market for beans, correct?
Yes, it really is. And we certainly appreciate our Chinese customers in the 08-09 year. In the soybean year, the export year ends on September 1st, so it's a little different than a calendar year. But in that year, China purchased 686 million bushels of soybeans, and we are very pleased that they do that. They do a lot of the crushing within their own country, so we work with their importers a lot, and of course with their livestock industry within China, there are a lot of sales made to them by way of their crushers that are in China.
Does USEC push not only whole bean sales, but product sales for meal and oil or value-added products?
Sure, and this last year has been a great year for us, and unfortunately for South America, they had a crop less than what they would have hoped, and so we have had a really great year this year selling products abroad. Soybean meal sales have been up, and also our oil sales have been up by 229% this last year, and our soybean meal exports have been up by 64%. And we realize that's due partially to South America having a lesser crop because of their drought, but also people around the world appreciate the value they get in U.S. soy and the quality of our product.
How do you determine the difference in the quality of the product as you go out and pitch U.S. soybeans to potential purchasers around the planet?
Well,
is it
one thing,
higher oil, higher protein content? Is it a cleaner product? What's the difference? I mean, it's a commodity, of course. So by definition, they should all be the same.
There are some differences in the product from one country to another, but one thing that the U.S. seems to have the advantage is the digestible amount of protein in our bean. And while it might be about the same protein content, more or less, than other countries, it does seem to have better digestibility, and that's one of the things that we certainly talk to livestock producers about.
Livestock producers then in other countries are one of the end users. What purpose do nations that import U.S. soybeans use them for? What kinds of products do they end up in?
In just about everything you can think of, just as they're used here in the U.S. Certainly livestock is our biggest customer. Poultry is the largest customer around the world, followed by pork. And a new venture that we've gotten into in the last few years is aquaculture. And we're expecting to have great sales in meal put into palletized foods or food for aquaculture. I think when people think about imports into the U.S., you think about probably petroleum products as being our largest import into the U.S., but the second largest that people don't think about is that aquaculture is our number two value import into the U.S.
So seafood is the number two product coming into the United States, or products from the sea. How much of a market do you think there might be for soy into the seafood or industry, the aquacultural industry? And they would be slightly different, I suppose, because one of them would be wild captures and the others would be the market I assume you're looking at would be an aquaculture farm. How much of a potential marketplace do you believe might be there internationally?
We think it's going to grow a great deal. Like livestock, fish need high-protein diets, and fish meal has in the past been the diet for feeding even capture, aquaculture, or wild catch, but it certainly is in limited supplies, and it's being depleted quickly, and therefore they need a protein source, and soy products have the potential to replace fish meal and fish oil as a renewable food diet for fish. And it has the best amino acid complex available of any plant options. And best part, it's really economical for people to use in their aquaculture feeding.
And finally, do you ask for input from farmers? And if they do want to call you or to call the United Soybean Export Council, how do they do that?
Well, certainly there's a website where they can contact the Export Council, and we'd certainly be happy to talk with them, to any of the board members or your different state organizations, like the Illinois Soybean Association, would be happy to talk with them about their export sales. But the USIC office in St. Louis would be the main contact.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Anything else you want to cover with us before we let you go for the afternoon?
No, it's been a pleasure to be with you, and we look forward to working throughout the industry, selling beans and providing a service to our U.S. soybean farmers.
Have you got all your corn planted at this point?
Well, we actually do have ours in. I hope it's not in too early. But
have you started putting beans in yet?
No, we have not. We have not done that. But I'll tell you, this is about, I think, 6 weeks earlier than last year when the corn was in. So it's quite a difference, that's for sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Sharon Covert, for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Sharon Covert is with Covert Farms. That's in Tiscola, Illinois, in Bureau County. And she is a member of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. If you'd like to contact the council, you can do that in a couple of ways. You can visit their website. That's at ussec.org. That stands for U.S. Soybean Export Council. Or, of course, you can always call them at 800-408-4993. That's 800-408-4993. You have been, of course, listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Prime Rib Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, the British Parliament passed the Tea Act, one of the events that led to the American Revolution. In 1865, Cornell University was chartered. Cornell is an agricultural land-grant university endowed by Ezra Cornell, one of the founders of the Western Union Telegraph Company. In 1898, the first Weather Bureau kite was launched from Topeka, Kansas. And by the end of the year, 17 kite stations were attempting to collect daily weather observations. The box kites were 8 feet long, 7 feet wide, and 3 feet high. In 1902, Julius Sterling Morton died. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. Over 1 million trees were planted. He was a strong supporter of forestation and spent his life conducting agricultural experiments on his estate. From 1893 to 1897, he served as Secretary of Agriculture under President Grover Cleveland. And in 2004, Roy Walford died. An American pathologist, he pioneered the idea of restricting food intake to extend lifespan. His research in the 1960s on mice showed that restricting their caloric intake by about 40% resulted in nearly doubling the lifespan of mice. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist from the FarmDoc team and the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences is now here to talk about acre payments. He just penned an article on what can be expected from that program for last season and the coming season. Gary, thanks for being here. First, remind us about the acre program.
Acre is a new commodity program that's part of the Farm Bill, and farmers and others who own land can switch their FSA farm units over from the traditional commodity program into Acre. And Acre's a revenue-based program that makes payments based on what happens to state revenue relative to a guarantee.
Farmers in the state of Illinois were the most gangbuster in signing up for the Acre program last year, although that number wasn't all that large. I think it was the biggest in the nation, but still less than 20% or thereabouts, I believe.
It was about 25%. There were a couple other states with larger, Oklahoma and Washington. Wheat producers benefited from Acre in 2009.
Yeah, there's a reason that they signed up, and it shows up in the estimated acre payments that you put together for this podcast and for the article. It shows wheat at $90 in the state of Illinois.
Yep, state acre payments, and this would be for 2009 or the production that happened last year and will receive payments in October. $90 for wheat, and what we had was a very high guarantee because wheat prices were very high in 2007 and 2008. So wheat payments were $90. Corn is estimated at $27 and soybeans at $0 an acre.
And are you surprised at any of those figures at this time?
No. Corn is making payments because prices, unfortunately, have fallen. So the revenue part of that is working. A couple months ago, we would have had corn at a lower number. But people, are going to be surprised with the large number for wheat. But wheat will make payments in 2009 and likely again in 2010.
And these are payments per acre. So it's $27 per acre on the corn, $90 per acre. On the wheat, your expectations for 2010 look like what?
2010, we're coming in with an expected state acre payment of $41 an acre and estimate that payments will happen, about a 50% chance of payments happening. So, you know, looking at a lot of different price and yield scenarios, $41 for corn, $14 for soybeans, and we'd estimate about a 1 in 3 chance of soybeans getting a payment, and a $33 payment for wheat, and a 66%, or 2 out of 3 years we'd expect payments on wheat. And the wheat payment, if anything, I think we're a little bit cautious or on that wheat payment, but pretty high chances of wheat payment again in 2010.
Now, those who have signed up already for this program are in the program until 2012, correct?
Once you sign up for Farm and Acre, that farm will be in it till 2012, the end of the Farm Bill. So the decision that people have on June 1 is if they have a farm that hasn't been enrolled, they can again enroll it in 2010. Our 2010 estimates would say that would be higher than average chances of getting payments for Acre in 2010.
Let me take these up separately, because if I remember correctly, in order to get the Acre payment for 2010, if you're already enrolled in the program, you'll need to tell them you're enrolled in the program. It's a funny little.
Yeah, you still have to sign up for the commodity programs itself. So if you, it's just yes, I want commodity program payments.
Yeah,
and
but you make sure you get the paperwork filled out. Yes, despite the fact you're already enrolled, you'll still need to sign up for the ACRE program. Relatively speaking, you have to tell them you're already in the ACRE program. But then there are those who have not signed up for the ACRE program. And are you suggesting by commodity whether they should or should not this year? Because we only have a couple more years left of the program.
Yeah. For those that haven't enrolled, they still, by the way, still have to go in and sign up for the program. But if they do, 2010 again looks like a year in which expectations would be that what you give up in direct payments will be more than made up in ACRE payments. Again, that's an expectation, but I would also suggest that wheat farmers really take a close look at it if they have growing wheat, because wheat will make payments or likely make payments in 2010.
Yeah, again, what are you giving up in the direct payment? How much?
20%, which is direct payments are generally between $20 and $25 an acre in Illinois, so $4 or $5 an acre.
$4 or $5 an acre. So if you were a wheat farmer and you signed up all your acres, you made your payment back this year.
Yep.
If you're a corn farmer only and not the wheat, you got most of it back for all the acres, despite the fact that you didn't get soybeans back quite likely.
That's correct. Again, in Illinois, the southern Illinois farmers will have a wheat payment and likely a corn payment as well.
I say you've got it back, but we won't know really until the end of the marketing year.
End of the marketing year. ACRE is always a marketing year program. So the 2009, we don't know that for sure yet because the marketing year for corn and soybeans ends in August. So we have a couple more months there. Wheat ends in May, and we're very sure of the wheat acre payment.
Would you sign up soybean acres?
You have to.
You have to sign up everything?
Yeah, everything. And again, this year, I mean, we're looking at higher, above average chances of getting acre payments. So, yeah, it would be another year where you might want to give it a good hard look.
That's Gary Schnittke, a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him online at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.